Proverbs chapter 22. Last time we were together, we had finished verse 8. So we look at Proverbs chapter 22, verse 9. He who has a generous eye will be blessed, for he gives of his bread to the poor. John, did you use that verse a few weeks ago when you were talking about giving to the poor? I didn't recall you hearing that one being read. And you're right, there are a number of them here. Someone has said, here's the answer to the statement, I can't afford to be generous. Do you notice what Solomon said? He who has a generous eye will be blessed, for he gives of his bread to the poor. The folk who edited the Bible that I'm using had this footnote next to this verse. It said, our own well-being is bound up with that of others, so that what we do for their good benefits ourselves as well. In fact, if you would turn back to chapter 19, just to see another verse, we'll just hit several verses here that reflect on this whole matter of being concerned for people in need. Chapter 19 and verse 17 reads, he who has pity on the poor lends to the Lord, and he will pay back what he has given. Do you ever think of lending to God? I mean, how can you know, the proverbial thing, giving a gift to somebody who has everything. What's that phrase that you talk, what do you get somebody who has it all? Or it'll come later. He really has it all. And yet Solomon says, when you do it this way, when you have pity on the poor, you're lending to the Lord, and he will pay back what he has given. Now, most of our translations have capital H for the pronoun he. That's proper, though the Hebrew doesn't have capitals or small letters. It's all the same. But obviously, it's not a poor person who's going to pay you back. That's not the intent. It's God who will do this. So let me just clip off two or three other verses from Proverbs alone, then we'll turn to another passage here. Back in chapter 14, for example, there are two that we've already looked at. Verse 21 reads, he who despises his neighbor sins, but he who has mercy on the poor, happy is he. Happy is he. Your happiness is included in that. 10 verses later, in chapter 14, verse 31, Solomon said, he who oppresses the poor reproaches his maker, but he who honors him has mercy on the needy. There's something else involved in this matter of having compassion on people who are in need, and that is, if I can take it even a step further, we're reproaching our Maker, Solomon says. It's as if we're taking his name in vain. If you are a child of God, you're now responsible for your conduct. You are a representative of the king. You're one of the king's children. You're one of God's children. So what you do reflects on him. And when you reflect badly on him in this way, and particularly here, oppressing the poor, you're reproaching him. In fact, he says, but he who honors him has mercy on the needy. So there's, in the retrospect, you're honoring him when you do it that way. One more passage, and later in Proverbs chapter 28, he who gives to the poor will not lack, but he who hides his eyes will have many curses. Not only are you promised happiness, not only are you honoring God when you open your heart appropriately to those in need, but the Lord promises that you won't lack. The folk at who put together the Bible Knowledge Commentary, a number of Dallas professors, had this to say on this verse. The back in chapter 22, verse 9, it reads, he who has a generous eye. The word for generous eye literally reads a good eye. And in another passage in Proverbs, when it talks about a stingy eye or a stingy person, guess what it is? If a generous eye is a good eye, a stingy person is a bad eye. Right? Good eye, bad eye. Interesting. And they said this, willingness to share food with the poor, and that's the word that's used here for poor refers to people who are feeble, who are weak, who are helpless. Willingness to share with them shows that a person is genuine. He looks at others with a desire to help them, not to take advantage of them. And that is a spirit that of both Old and New Testaments. Go back to Deuteronomy chapter 15. Just was seeing this today. I had looked at this the other week and then looked at it a little more closely today. Some of you know that in the economy, not just that God set up, the plan that God set up for his Old Testament people, he planned that every 7 years, what happened in Israel? Do you remember? Every seven days, what happens? The rest, right? Every 7 years, in an agriculture economy, the land was to rest. The seventh year, you weren't to till your land. You let it rest. And in addition to letting the land rest, the first few verses of chapter 15 refer to another thing that was included. Debts were to be canceled. Okay, so you have a debt, and you're part of the Israelite community. Now, it didn't apply, if I'm remembering correctly, it doesn't apply if you had borrowed as an outsider to the Israelite community. You still were obligated. But if you were a part of the community, on the seventh year, it was forgiven. Now, but that brings up, if your wheels are turning, that brings up a problem, doesn't it? If I know that the lender is obligated to forgive a debt every 7 years, and this is coming up on the sixth year, and I'd love to get that couch. So I borrow money from him because at the seventh year, he's got to forgive it. And so they had to work out that thing, but in the process of explaining that through here, he says, you make sure that you don't, one of your poor brothers comes to you and has a need, don't let your heart say, but it's the seventh year is coming up. If I give this to him now, I'll have to forgive it. God said, don't do that. Don't harden your heart to him. You be sensitive to that person. And it's out of that context that he says this in verse 7. If there is among you a poor man of your brethren within any of your gates in your land, which the Lord your God is giving you, you shall not harden your heart nor shut your hand from your poor brother. But you shall open your hand wide to him and willingly lend him sufficient for his need, whatever he needs. Beware lest there be a wicked thought in your heart, saying, the seventh year, the year of release is at hand. And your eye be evil against your poor brother, and you give him nothing, and he cry out to the Lord against you, and it becomes sin among you. You shall surely give to him, and your heart shall not be grieved when you give to him, because for this thing the Lord your God will bless you in all your work and in all to which you put your hand. For the poor will never cease from the land. Where have you heard that before? Yeah, Jesus made that statement, didn't he? The poor you always have with you. By the way, that was spoken to Judas, who was saying, why didn't you sell this fine ointment that they just broke on you, Jesus? I think it was Martha, sister Mary, anointed him before the crucifixion. Why didn't you sell it? And John says, he wasn't concerned for and give it to the poor. He wasn't concerned for the poor. He was a thief. He was stealing stuff from the bank. But Jesus used it to say, look, the poor you always have with you, but you only have me here right now. And it was appropriate. But even the Lord speaking through Moses here in that Old Testament setting said, the poor will never cease to be in the land. Therefore, I command you, saying, you shall open your hand wide to your brother, to your poor, to your needy, and your land. One more passage, and now we swing way over to the New Testament, 2 Corinthians. 2 Corinthians. Did anyone happen to hear James Montgomery Boyce this morning? He continues in his study in the book of Romans. He's in chapter 16, I believe, now. And he was talking about giving, of all things, today, and doing a wonderful job. By the way, There's another example. In the very fruitful wife, and suddenly developed, in his case, cancer again, and very quickly was gone. And but as he was speaking, he went, among other places, to this passage. Now, let me just remind you of the setting here. Actually, this passage, while we're looking at chapter 9, begins in the context over in chapter 8. Paul had planned to collect a special offering for the churches, from the churches that were outside of Jerusalem. Those are predominantly Gentile churches. And he wanted to get an offering together to help the Jewish Christians who were having a difficult time of it back there in Palestine. Chapter 8, verse 1 and following, Paul says one of the great examples of the spirit of Christian giving, as he established this among the Gentile churches, were the group of churches over in Macedonia. And the reason it was so significant was that that they themselves were suffering. It's one thing for me to give when I've got a big bank account. I can give you a little bit. He said, the people in Macedonia were really hurting. But as he's speaking to the church at Corinth, he said, you know, when they heard that a year ago you got all excited and you promised that you were going to give, they said, well, if the Corinthians could do it, we're going to do it too. And they got all excited and they gave, but he said, they didn't give as I had initially thought they would, just from their resource. He says, first of all, they gave themselves to Christ. And then they gave out of their great plenty. So they gave themselves to the Lord and then wonderfully gave of their material possessions as well. So as Paul opens chapter 9, he's reminding the Corinthians that a year before, they had promised to make a generous contribution. They didn't give a quantity. They said, we're going to give, Paul. We're going to give this offering, but so far nothing's been done. And it's a touchy thing. It's interesting. Paul, as an apostle, had the right on a number of situations to instruct and command things. You have to do this. I want you to do this. But he wisely chose to not go that route and to appeal instead. And he does it here. He says, you know, you made this promise of an offering, but so far nothing's been done. So he appeals to them to follow through and to put feet to their words, as it were. And it's in this context. I said all that to bring you to what are somewhat familiar verses here, chapter 9, verse 6. But this I say, he who sows sparingly will also reap sparingly. And he who sows bountifully will also reap bountifully. So let each one give as he purposes in his heart, not grudgingly or of necessity, for God loves a cheerful giver. And God is able to make all grace abound toward you, that you, always having all sufficiency in all things, may have an abundance for every good work. Any comments or observations as we stop with this evening before going to the Lord's table? Yes, yes, thank you, Craig. In fact, right after that, kind of borrows the imagery from agriculture and farmers. Now, may he who supplies seed to the sower and bread for food supply and multiply the seed you've sown and increase the fruits of your righteousness. Another place in, I think it's Galatians, Paul said, be diligent to do good to everyone, especially those of the household of faith. That is, as Christians, there needs to be a sensitivity to genuine needs that are around us, whether they're with believers or non-believers, but we're to be especially sensitive to brothers and sisters, the household of faith. Not saying we cut off non-believers, but Paul is saying, especially those who are your brothers and sisters, you be sensitive to them. Well, let's make a Since you're still open here, we're going to make a transition and make sure that I point out to you that, in all of the giving, as Paul was appealing and making his point, Jesus Christ was the ultimate pace setter. Christian giving is giving that's based upon God's giving first. We love him because he first loved us. Right? We love, actually, is what John said, because he first loved us. In the matter of giving, Christ was the pattern. How so? Well, verse 9 of chapter 8 tells us, "For you know the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ, that though he was rich, yet for your sakes he became poor, that you through his poverty might become rich." Seems to me that as we, this is a very natural transition or bridge to bring us from talking about meeting the material needs of people that are worse off than us that have needs, to thinking in terms of the ultimate need that was met by Christ when he gave himself to pay the debt of our sin. And that's what we come together to remember around this table, isn't it? Let's take a moment to bow our heads together and just to ourselves reflect on what we're about to do as we take these elements together. Ask the Lord to search our hearts this evening.